was a candidate for a few months. Had discussions and identified the need that we have this meeting, and I'm very glad that also the colleagues from both committees are here now this afternoon. Maybe just in terms of our program, the first two briefings, I'll chair the meeting in terms of SAPSIRA and the discussions, questions, and then Honourable September will take over and deal with SASIKA as well as then the discussions and also the closure. But of course, he's at any time welcome to intervene in terms of any questions or anything. Maybe anything from your side, Honourable September?
Good afternoon, everyone. Equally from the side of higher education and training, we're equally happy that we can have this joint meeting with the Committee on Police. And in particular, on the same day that we're having the CETA here also, we value the input that you will be making insofar as strengthening, especially the discussion also on the CETA. And I think you would know that the committee has written to you, took a decision to write to you last year, and have then asked that we discuss as the two committees together the aspect as it relates to protests at higher education and training institutions. But also secondly, we had the Stellenbosch University before us recently, and we were hearing very horrified stories about the kind of protection or non-protection of students at that level, and probably would be, and you would know that the one student that tragically died there. But the story is the same at Witsits, the story is the same at UCT, and the list goes on and so on. And so we're quite interested also to hear what measures are being put in place, but in particular when students protested last year, the year before, and last year in particular, the difficulties that they have experienced, and hence the committee having a discussion with yourself to say how do we have this have a discussion about this. So we're very happy that the committee has decided to bring both SAPS and also CIRA to this meeting, and then thereafter, as you said, we'll deal with the CETA. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll then first ask the honourable members just to introduce themselves. We can start here from honourable Bellison.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon. My name is Akelem Bele, member of the Police Committee.
Chair, good afternoon. I'm Rikus van der Westhuizen, member of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training.
Dumelang bagaetsho, leina la ka tla e tshimole ba tsikile lo la committee ya sepodi sikiane.
Igama lami uPhindile Mola, i-member ye-Portfolio Committee on Police. Thank you.
Absent Vito Elvis Wela, Higher Education Portfolio Committee.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nkadimeng Frida, member of the Higher Education Portfolio Committee.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Philip Nsamo, member of the Police Portfolio Committee.
Melamba Haesu, Lina Laka Kitini Kekana, member of the High Committee Whip.
Thank you very much, honourable members. We will just then ask the delegations. Sira Professor, you're welcome to introduce your delegation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members of the Portfolio Committees. The Sira delegation, we have Mr. Ndubane, who is Deputy Chair of the Council. Major General Finison, who is also a member of the council. Next to her is the director, the CEO, Mr. Manabela Chauge. Next to him is Mrs. Mado Sibahodi. She is our CFO, or Deputy Director, Finance and Administration. And then Ms. She is the Deputy Director, Communications and Training. And next to him, Mr. Stephen Badenhorst. He is the Acting Deputy Director, Law Enforcement, and on the
Officer. We received an apology from the Acting National Commissioner of Police, so we welcome the Acting National Commissioner, the Deputy National Commissioner for Policing, Jin Masomora. You're welcome to introduce your team.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committees, honorable members of both committees. Myself with his Lieutenant General Mawela on my left. He is the Divisional Commissioner of Operational Response Services. And next to him is the Component Head Public Order Police, that is Major General Mkhwanazi. And next to him is the Section Head for Planning and Monitoring in the Division of Operational Response Services, Brigadier Ali. That's the makeup of our delegation. But of course, opposite there is our parliamentary liaison officer, Colonel Steyn. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We'll ask the Administrator of CETA, Ms. Arshto Moshawane, to introduce the delegation.
Thanks, Chairs. Members, I'm Jenny Irish Kaboshiani, the Administrator of CETA. I'll ask my team members to just introduce themselves.
Good afternoon, I'm Juwelia Hamad, Head of Learning Programs and Quality Assurance.
Good afternoon, I'm Michael Khachachiva, the Head of Finance.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Fagani Memela, the Head of Skill Spending and Research and Monitoring and Evaluation.
Thank you very much. Then we'll ask the Department of Higher Education. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairs and Honorable Members. Malibu Lumka is my name, from the Department of Higher Education and Training, Chief Director responsible for Center Education and Training Authorities. And next to me is Melissa Era, who is the Director for CETA Support. Zakhele Hlongwana, Director for Public Entities in the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Thank you very much. Without further ado, we will then ask South African Police Services to do the first presentation, and they will be immediately followed by CIRA. Then we'll deal with questions, concerns, discussions, and after that, on the September, we'll take over. General, over to you.
Thanks, Chairpersons. Our presentation will be led by Brigadier Ali, and I will hereby allow him to take us through the presentation. And thereafter, I'll do some follow-ups. Thanks, Chairpersons.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The overview of the presentation, we will address the purpose, the background, measures implemented with regards to the hashtag Fees Must Fall protest, challenges from a security point of view, and we address security as a collective, and some of the recommendations to this House. The purpose is to brief the Portfolio Committee on Police on A, the policing strategy adopted to address the recent Fees Must Fall protest, and also to highlight the challenges that are facing institutions of higher learning from a security point of view. In terms of the background, and I think everyone is familiar with how the protest evolved, but we wanted to highlight the complexity of the protest, that it wasn't something that was straightforward, and as this protest evolved, the matter became more complex. And firstly, we start with the student protest that was initially brought about in October 2015 in response to the increase in fees at the South African universities. The University of Witwatersrand was one of the initial points where this protest started. It spread to the University of Cape Town, University of Pretoria and Rhodes University, before rapidly spreading to other institutions of higher learning across the country, and it became a countrywide protest. Although the protest was focused on a rise in fees, a number of other factors formed the background for the protest, from a lack of funding for poorer students, a lack of social transformation, to broader socioeconomic and racial inequality issues. Student protests were accompanied by violence, including assault, intimidation, arson, and damage to property. Recent protests also suggest that sections of the student movement are competing with one another to claim victories. And added to this has been the fact that major national political parties appear to be more active in trying to exert control over their student following at universities. Taking that complex situation into consideration, the following measures were implemented. As a response, the JCPS cluster and affected departments implemented a four-pillar integrated interdepartmental intervention plan. The four pillars consisted of pillar one, community and stakeholder engagement, and we'll elaborate more on that. Pillar two, the legal and regulatory framework and interventions. Pillar three, safety and security. And pillar four, mass communication. With regards to pillar one, community and stakeholder engagement, we felt that this pillar was one of the critical and most important pillars because solutions were based around community and stakeholder engagements. And we adopted the approach that the security elements were never a permanent solution. Engagement and participation would be the key. To pursue and lobby and mobilize and influence stakeholders in support of government's interventions. The Minister of Higher Education had engagements, vice chancellors, student leaders, parents, faith-based organizations. And there's one that we wanted to highlight is the Nelson Mandela Foundation, which mediated with the South African Police Service, the Wits Medical School, the Institute for Security Studies, the International Red Cross, in addressing student health during protest. Pillar two, the legal regulatory framework and interventions. Here, as a legal tool, we assembled all the legal measures available to us with regards to relevant laws and legal procedures in support of peace and stability. And this was achieved through interdicts, criminal actions to be prosecuted in normal courts but in a prioritized manner, bail to be opposed while investigations are underway, and prosecution-guided investigations. Civil remedies were to be followed and claims against organizers and those who caused damage. The Private Security Regulatory Authority, SIRA, was consulted in determining the role and function of private security companies during student protests. We also jointly developed guidelines with them and for SIRA to take into consideration, also considering the Regulation of Gatherings Act. I would ask that SIRA will explain more of this intervention that we had jointly initiated. SIRA was to also engage with the Safety and Security Sector Education and Training Authority, SASSETA, in developing training standards and training materials in line with the private security company mandate, and that is asset protection and protection of individuals. We also volunteered to assist in developing the training modules. Pillar three, safety and security. The SAP will fulfill its constitutional mandate by maintaining public order, addressing crime at all campuses through enhanced police visibility, working jointly with other security agencies to enhance effectiveness with clearly established roles and responsibilities, reporting lines, and command and control. And just to highlight this, Chair, that the police actions or the policing operations was an integrated one which encompassed all security agencies. Therefore, we have put in place clear roles and responsibilities, reporting lines, and command and control. control. We also went further to ensure that we monitor and coordinate all operational deployments. Pillar 4, which is also one of our main tools, and that was mass communication. A mass communication campaign through electronic media was launched to create dialogue and mobilize all sectors of the South African society to support government's interventions. The following coordination mechanism was activated in support of Pillar 3, Safety and Security, and that is at national level, we activated the NATJOC, the National Joint Operational Committee, which provided leadership and guidance to the provinces where the provincial joint operational committees were established. And from the provincial joint operational committees, at each institution of higher learning where we had challenges or where we had to have a security deployment, venue operational centers were established and headed by the South African Police Service. The following security measures were implemented. We activated an intelligence gathering network, a joint intelligence gathering network. Analysis was conducted with regards to our risk. In early warnings was prepared and distributed, and we coordinated safety and security inside the universities. One key feature was the appointment of a liaison officer, which was a new initiative, where a member of SAPS was tasked specifically to work with the institutions and all the role players in taking a more preventative approach to dealing with the challenges. The key feature of this police officer is that this person was never involved in any operational functions, but to be that go-between between the security forces and the stakeholders at campus with the intention of trying to solve the problems through other ways than a security solution. The following daily deployments took place with regards to dealing with the protest. With regards to SAPS capabilities, on a daily basis, we deployed public order policing, crime intelligence, detectives, and visible policing. And also to note, Honorable Chair, that the private security industry also played a very important role in our security solution as per their mandate. And campus security is another role player that impacted in our ability to police. With regards to the case management approach, the management of all criminal cases generated during unrest incidents by all stakeholders, including but not limited to dedicated investigation teams, the National Prosecuting Authority, NPA, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Department of Home Affairs, and Department of Correctional Services. This demonstrated our integrated approach. Efficient utilization of video cameras for purpose of evidence in the future. We had dedicated investigators deployed during the operations. Analysis of cases received, cases under investigation, cases forwarded to senior public prosecutor for decision, and cases to court guilty verdicts, not guilty verdicts, cases withdrawn in court, and cases closed as undetected. We also ensured there was continuous updating of the system to capture actual and accurate information. We ensured effective management of exhibits through optimizing the utilization of forensic evidence and leads. And there was a strong evidence-based approach used in bail applications. And we had regular feedbacks with regards to monitoring at provincial and national levels. Challenges from a security point of view. Our first challenge was the access to the institutions. there was a lack of uniform approach by the institutions with regards to South African Police Service access to the institutions. SAPS deployed differently from one institution to the next. There were also delays in obtaining court orders. There was ineffective access control management employed by certain institutions. Our second challenge was the inadequate cooperation with the South African Police Service. Role players were reluctant to cooperate fully with the SAPS in jointly ensuring safety and security. There was withdrawal of cases. Institutions adopted a different approach in order to ensure minimum conflict with the student population. There was a lack of support by the institutions to the ongoing criminal investigations. Institutions preferred to distance themselves from criminal investigations against the students, which has impacted negatively on the SAPS ability to present quality case dockets for prosecution. Some of the recommendations we make is that to ensure that the SAPS is effective in executing its mandate, the following is needed: total commitment, dedication, and support from all affected departments. There should be strong emphasis placed on mass communication as well as stakeholder engagement regarding government's responsibilities in order to ensure effective, proactive measures. And lastly, the initiative between the South African Police Service, the Nelson Mandela Foundation, the Institute for Security Studies, the Wits Medical School, the International Red Cross, regarding healthcare during student protests be adopted as a best practice and implemented at all institutions in the country. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Brigadier Ali. General, anything else to add?
Thanks, Chairperson. I just wanted to add that one would remember that during this specific unrest of Christmas fall, it was an enormous task because it was all over the country. So we had our hands full, and also the issue of shortage became a problem. And other issues that were also very important but problematic, some of the institutions, especially when it comes to the access control, you would find students from other universities running across the country. So the question is, if they are running an effective access control, how is students from other universities get themselves through to other universities? So those were some of the challenges that we experienced. And of course, the management of universities were not also sure. In certain instances, they were part of the students in certain areas. In certain areas, they would not require police to be on the premises. But when something goes wrong in the university, they want you to be there. Whereas they said you must wait outside to be called. And when you get called, then you are too late. You are blamed again. So those are the challenges that we encountered. Also the issue of cases. Remember that whoever sees something is a witness to that effect. And there was a reluctance in the staff and the management of the ministries in this regard. So those are some of the challenges that we experienced right across some of the institutions. Well, some were quite cooperative, and some, once it settles, they are no more interested in the case, and it's up to the police to push the case along, which is also problematic because somebody must come and give evidence as to what has happened. Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you, General Maswala. Thank you, Saps, for that presentation. We'll immediately then go to Sira. Mr. Chauke, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the Joint Committee. Chairperson, our Deputy Director of Law Enforcement will lead the initial delegation.
Thank you, Chairpersons, honourable members. My presentation is going to deal with a couple of things, and specifically the involvement in the private security industry at protecting campuses and institutions of higher learning during this period of the Feast Must Fall. I think we can skip the delegation. The presentation will cover a little bit of CIRA, just to put it in the context in terms of our mandate and the role of the private security industry regulatory authority. I'll then discuss the issue of crowd management in general, and then specifically the mandate and the role of the private security industry in crowd management. I'll talk about engagement between CIRA, Department of Higher Education, and the institutions of higher learning, as well as SUPS, and I know Brigadier Ali already mentioned some of our interactions. In terms of the overview, Chairpersons, basically the purpose of the regulator is to ensure that the private security industry is regulated and ensure that there is effective control in the interest of the public, the national interest, and then the interest of the private security industry itself. Now, our mandate is quite highlighted and quite broad in terms of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act, and specifically Section 3, but it talks about legitimizing the private security industry and to ensure that the industry do not pose a threat to the national and public interest. Our mandate is to ensure professionalism and transparency of the private security industry. When we talk about professionalism here, we're specifically highlighting the competency of the industry in order to render the security services they are contracted to do. Our mandate is also to ensure the stability in the private security industry. This industry is a significant private police force in our country. In terms of our statistics, it's about 9,000 active registered security businesses employing almost in the region of 500,000 registered and active security officers. So it's quite a significant private police force, if we can call it that. Part of our mandate is also to ensure that there's trustworthiness by this private security industry in rendering security services. There's also efficiency and responsibility, that they meet their obligations towards their clients that pays for their services. We also look at the interests of the security officers themselves, although labor legislation ensures the protection of the employees from basic conditions of employment and other conditions of employment, but we do have a mandate in terms of our legislation to ensure that the security officers are protected in terms of their rights as far as labor legislation is concerned. I spoke about the responsiveness to the needs of the users of security services, and I think this is something we will obviously touch on later on in the presentation when it came to the expectation of the private security industry in protecting campuses and institutions of higher learning. We also mandated to ensure empowerment and advancement of persons, and generally to maintain and protect the status, to uplift the profession of security service providers and give it a higher level of status. And then, very importantly as well, to look at the issue of training, to ensure there's high training standards in the private security industry. We determine the minimum training standards that security service providers must meet in order to render a particular security service, and we need to obviously ensure that those training standards are of a high quality. I'm not going to go much in terms of organizational structure. Obviously, we, in terms of our political head, there's the Minister of Police, and our council is obviously responsible as our accounting authority, and then we also have subcommittees from council, and then the authority itself as the body responsible for regulating the private security industry. In terms of crowd management, there's a couple of legislation that's relevant to when it comes to crowd control and managing protests and gatherings. Now, obviously, the first legislation is the Gatherings Act of 1993, which is basically your enabling legislation and takes precedence. It provides for the crowd control management in respect of protest context or criticism in public space, and then that legislation specifically referred to the role of the South African Police Service in ensuring that there's law and order in managing protests in public space. Now, the Private Security Industry Regulation Act basically refers to security services that are limited to protecting and safeguarding persons or property. We are very well aware that there's an element of crowd management and crowd control within the function of a private security service provider, but it's limited to protecting and safeguarding persons or property. Our Act does highlight that event management or crowd management in an event environment is the purpose of the security service is limited to protecting and safeguarding persons or property. If we look at other legislation and prescripts and notices that's relevant in crowd management, obviously the Criminal Procedure Act of 1977, the draft Netlacker Court and Code of Good Practice in Industrial Action and Picketing, which is basically highlighting the role of the private security industry in a number of role plays, including the South African Police Service, in terms of ensuring that there's no one takes sides. Persons are entitled to exercise the constitutional right to protest and picket, and obviously from a private security industry perspective, they need to ensure that they are honouring and respecting that right that's highlighted in the Bill of Rights. SAPS National Instruction of 2014 on public order policing, which is probably the most important instruction when it comes to crowd management during public gatherings and demonstrations, especially when it comes to the threat assessments, and then obviously your standard operating procedures, both from security businesses as well as from SAPS. Now when it comes to, and I don't want to go much into detail of what we experience in the FISMAS 4, but maybe just in summary, from our perspective and what we saw during the FISMAS 4 campaign is that we saw that security or service providers are doing a security service they're not necessarily trained to do. They were not equipped and they were not trained to deal with the crowd disbursement that was actually expected from the. That was a major challenge that we experienced. We also saw in from our own inspection investigations that some universities and campuses employed unregistered security service providers, untrained security service providers. We had a lot of cases where the contracted security company, although they were legitimately registered with us, they tended to subcontract work when there was particular high levels of protest and they were not able to cope, then they subcontracted work to people that were not legally registered and compliant. We also saw that the security industry tended to exceed their powers in terms of how they dealt with the protest action, and as I mentioned, they were not adequately trained to do so. We've also identified a number of untoward behavior. We saw it all on the media, where security officers retaliated incorrectly. They also picked up stones and they flew it back, and those kind of actions that was unacceptable in terms of their conduct. One of our challenges as well is the identification that we've experienced in looking at, when we investigated our cases, where security officers were not identifiable. They wore one color uniform with no identity tags. We could not determine which company they are representing, and those kind of things that we saw as well. And in certain cases as well, the equipment that was issued to the security officers was not adequate. Obviously, it's labor legislation that an employee needs to ensure that they create a safe environment for the employees, and we saw in certain cases security officers also getting injured. Now, what we've done is, and Brigadier Ali also mentioned that, is we've identified a couple of obligations that the security industry must follow in protest environment, and we developed a directive as far as that is concerned. Obviously, the most important thing is respect the constitution, and specifically the Bill of Rights of persons to assemble peacefully and to demonstrate, picket and present petitions. We've also highlighted the importance of the contract and agreement of a client must be limited to protection and safeguarding. We saw a lot of institutions attempting to contract the private security industry to do actual crowd disbursement, which is not the function of private security industry. So that's one of the obligations that we've highlighted. Ultimately, in terms of their obligation, is where possible, they need to defuse possible conflict, first of all, before it escalates into violence. That's the function of private security industry. Very importantly is the reporting. And although we're focusing, Chairpersons, on the FISMAS 4, obviously this is not just relevant to FISMAS 4. The protest can happen at any environment at any time, in a mining industry or any other industry. Reporting the protest to the South African Police Service and in order for them to obviously take the necessary control of the environment. Handing over of operational control and command to the South African Police Service, and then where necessary provide reasonable assistance to the South African Police Service as a force multiplier, but not being responsible to property. If they knew the processes on their way, you know, static barriers and all those kind of things to protect the private property. One of the obligations that we've highlighted very clearly to the industry is dispersal of crowds. That's the function of the South African Police Service. It's not a function of the private security industry to be the first line of offence and then actually be responsible for the dispersal of the crowds in itself. Generally, in terms of compliance with the CIRA legislation, ensuring that the people are adequately registered with us, that are adequately trained and meeting the obligation in terms of training, identification of the individuals carrying their CIRA ID cards, demonstrating that they are legally registered, but also very importantly, for any misbehavior and misconduct by the security service provider or security officer, for that person to be able to be identified, where the complaint can be laid against abuse of power. That's a very important part in terms of the CIRA ID cards. Uniforms and insignia, as I mentioned, that was one of the big challenges. Our director clearly highlights this as well, it must be visible. One of the challenges that we experience is that some of the security companies seem to try and divorce themselves from the conduct of the security officers by issuing them with uniforms that are not identifiable. If they are proud of the conduct of their security industry and the professionalism of their security officers, they should display the logo and brand quite clearly so it's identifiable. But we saw that they issue security officers with uniforms where basically when someone wants to lay a complaint, they can't identify which company was actually the culprit in terms of the deployment. And then labor law obligations, which we highlighted as well in terms of the obligation of private security industry, specifically in terms of ensuring a safe environment for the security officers. We've had companies that actually were contracted to deploy security officers but not issuing them with any safety equipment, which obviously poses significant risk to the security officers themselves in terms of self-defense. We've talked about the issue of training, and the issue of training is something that will be ongoing, Chairpersons, because here we are talking about general training for every security officer when it comes to dealing with environment where there's protest action. The focus here is obviously on the fees must fall, but protest action can develop in any environment, from a labor-related strike or any other environment, and the security officers that's actually deployed that these clients must be able to respond to that and have the necessary knowledge and competency in how to deal with it. We've also highlighted in our obligations and our directive specifically the issue of the issuing of equipment and certain prohibited items, like for example, firearms should be completely prohibited in an environment where a private security industry is deployed, where they are interacting with protesters. Also certain other equipment we've highlighted actually quite clear in our directive, paintball guns, we sometimes see as well flammable substances, even the use of pepper spray, which is not just posing a risk to the individuals but also the security officers themselves and in their self-defense. And then use of force that of course it must be proportionate to this environment and the threat itself. The code of conduct for security service providers also talk to that. It must be proportionate. If not, then action can be taken as a breach of the code of conduct rules. And then any use of force by the private security industry obviously must immediately be reported to the South African Police Service. Now, in terms of our stakeholder engagements, when it comes to our interaction with the Department of Higher Education and the institutions themselves and subs, we've had discussions, and Brigadier Ali mentioned that, with the South African Police Service on this issue, because we don't want a situation where there's confusion from the expectation of the South African Police Service on the private security industry, and where the private security industry is then not in a position or, they do not have the capacity to act. So this is very important for us to come to an agreement in terms of the understanding the roles of the South African Police Service in dealing with protest environment and the role of the private security industry. I'm happy to announce that was understood between all the parties and following thereon, CIRA developed a directive to the private security industry to actually highlight these obligations and to clarify the role of the private security industry in this particular environment. And South African Police Service obviously will develop their own standard operating procedure in terms of their interaction with the private security industry when they're on the scene. I think it's generally accepted we can't wish this private security industry away in this environment. I've mentioned that. It's very important that they are going to be there. They've got a mandate, they've got a role to fulfill in terms of protecting and safeguarding their clients' property and persons, but they must understand their role, and they need to understand as well where the end of the line is and where the South African Police Service need to take further responsibility for dispersing crowds. In terms of further interaction, we held meetings with USAF, the University South Africa Forum, and the TVET College's Governance Council on the role of CIRA for them to also understand that they don't have to create an expectation that the private security industry is going to take, they can contract the private security industry to deal with protest action. It's very important that they understand that this is not a function of the private security industry, and they cannot place that expectation on the private security industry. And our liaison is obviously ongoing. We've also interacted with Comprosa in 2016 on this issue, and we will also be part of the conference in September 2017 as a key stakeholder, where we will highlight this as well. We obviously, from our perspective, we engage with all the institutions of higher learning, the different campuses, that were affected by protests. There were 16 institutions, institutions of higher learning affected. There were about 19 campuses affected, and we liaise with them throughout the FISMAS for to ensure that they understand the role of the private security industry. Following from our, obviously after action, we've had a number of investigations that we opened, 24 to be precise, for misconduct of the security industry. Obviously from our side, this, we continue to find interaction, and we continue to do so even today. Even though there's no protest action at this stage, at the universities via education, but we do still continue with our inspection program at these institutions, and I can report that the compliance levels in terms of employing registered security companies and registered security officers from an in-house environment as well as a contract environment is very high. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chowkey. Anything you want to add to the presentation?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you recall that we, in our last engagement, we also reported that we were looking at bringing in the education of human rights into the curriculum. Security officers, I think maybe our Deputy Director of Communications can talk a little bit about it. Where do we find it? Just to inform the House what we're doing about it.
If you can just have a brief input. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. NESFA is introduction of the human rights module to our overall training standards concern. We've sent out a directive to the entire industry indicating that we'll be developing a specific module to address human rights for the entire private security industry. And I'm happy to inform that the industry has welcomed that aspect with open arms, and we'll be engaging further to make sure that it's interactive and address all the key issues.
Thank you very much for those presentations. We will immediately go to discussions and questions. Let's restrict it for the first round, one question per member, because there's about 14 members. So let's start on this side, Honourable Bailey, and then we'll work through the list. Yeah, the line and the list.
Thank you, Chair. It's going to be hard to think of just which one question to ask. Identify here. I mean, I think the first point to be made is that obviously one appreciates that this is quite a difficult and grey area for many of the players involved, because the line between being a first responder and safeguarding and protecting as a private security firm in a situation that is rapidly escalating, and especially if there might be a slow SAPS response because they're stretched too thin or whatever the case might be, that line becomes very blurred. So the trade-off between fulfilling your function to protect and not overstepping the mark can make it quite tricky. But I think perhaps for this first round, I'd like to direct my question to CIRA, which is that there's all the work around guidelines being jointly formulated and giving training to the private security firm, but would CIRA also consider that recording equipment, like body cams and microphones, should be made compulsory for security firms who then function in that kind of environment, or who find themselves conducting crowd management and being first responders. It's a discussion we've had in the SAFS space, and I'm just wondering if there's been thinking around the value of that in private security, just for accountability and to make it easier to follow up on complaints. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Abbas.
Thank you, Chairperson. One. To CIRA, how many cases were reported to SAFS where the use of force was applied? Thanks.
Honourable Foreign Minister.
Thank you. The Chairperson, as the presentation stated, what originated as protests and I think in all cases originally peaceful protests, then unfortunately turned to violence, assaults, intimidation, arson and damage to property. And it is my impression that there have been very few cases where people have been brought to book for what eventually boiled down to criminal activities. And my question is just, you know, what is the police's response so that in future we will not see that kind of behavior escalating or then actually turning into criminal behavior? What will you do in order to ensure that those that unfortunately cannot contain themselves and that then eventually exploit such a situation, that in future they be brought to book? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Zwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to summarise it. The South African Police Service has indicated that there have been analysis in terms of the case documentation. And I just want to know, in terms of the cases reported and the present trends, what can we identify there particularly to ensure that it gives guidance to the strategic plan and how we deal with firstly the safety on campuses generically and also in terms of responses from both the police and the students when we find ourselves in protest. So it speaks into the generic safety of our students, accosting, communication, etc.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentations. My question is for SAFS. Will you please indicate the manner in which safety and security inside universities are coordinated and elaborate on the role played by SAFS? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Kekana.
Thank you, Chair. Still on the issue of university, I just want to understand how the intelligence within the police works. Because in many instances when students go out and burn old buildings, though the police is there surrounding the university, it actually ridicules the whole process because the police is there. But building can burn. I don't want to call them the Limpopo area where 25 schools get burned. And you asking yourself, what kind of a state is this when you've got policemen and they burn the first school, the second school, then they don't even get tired. That's 25 and where is the police? So I just want to know how it works, especially as regarding intelligence that should inform even before.
Honourable Suwela, then Honourable Karimeng, and then Honourable Kihan. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. My question is directed to CIRA. From your presentation, you said you indicated that some universities did
the event that something goes horribly wrong, who is held accountable? The unregistered companies or the university? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for all these presentations. My question will be on SAP, on the access to institutions. You have reported that there were lack of uniform approach by institutions with regard to the SAP's access to institutions. I want you to clarify how it was done. If it is possible, maybe to even indicate which universities were doing, how were they doing it in terms of the access. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to pose my question to both institutions. It is with regards to lack of compliance. One, in the case of SAPS, with the Regulation of the Gatherings Act, and in relation to the private security industry, the Private Security Regulation Act. The issue about non-compliance is it possible for any one of the two components to actually ignore legislative prescripts? In other words, why does SAPS allow institutions to come into sort of your role to ensure compliance by everybody, you know, with the law and the constitution? Also, as far as the private industry is concerned, who is supposed to ensure compliance by all of those institutions registered with you to ensure that the people who work for them comply with the law? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Kian. Professor Simon.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My question is, how effective, in the view of the members of safety and security cluster in general, how effective were the services that were rendered? And if they were not sufficiently effective, what was lacking and what should be brought on board going forward? The question is asked based on the information that the damage to the universities eventually amounted to R1 billion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Klongo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Though it's a bit abstract question, because of the nature of things. One, before I get to my question, Chairperson, I think I will really sympathize with the security forces of our land, because Chairperson, it's becoming very clear that as leadership of the country, we tend to apportion our failures to organs of security, thus then undermining the very essence of what is taking or unfolding in front of our eyes. Here you are dealing with the revolution in action, unfolding right under our nose. Calling for genuine things, complete decolonization of our own education, and also free education, in the wake of billions being stolen by individuals in this country. Now then, that leaves a serious question to say, are we really honest? Are we an honest nation to ourselves? Recently, we have been celebrating Jefferson June 16, as if June 16 was a wedding, a nice wedding or a party. That was revolution, and the people died, and there was a complete destruction of property. Why then are we celebrating that thing, even only if we can then turn to criminalize revolution and say, as a black particularly with us then as people of this country, we must subject ourselves to the horrors of the past and of those people who actually termed us as inferior people who can't even think. Now, my main question will be, as security forces of our country, one, because we have got National Intelligence Agency, which I believe will actually then be able to sit above, scan the terrain, and be able to inform powers that be to say, be careful, there is a storm coming 5 or 10 or 20 years in terms of the societal development. Or then we are just a nation that is always reacting caught with our pants down. Because if that National Intelligence Agency cannot discharge its duties correctly to inform other organs of security so that they can better prepare ahead of the storm, it's a disaster. Then lastly, Chairperson, it's a question of to say, what has been learned by our security forces in all this? Or who, because I was scared that Marikana was not necessarily a distance away from us because of the ideological orientation of us and also the pettiness of the lives of the people of the country. When we, who are in power, cannot even tend to listen to the people, instead then resort to force in order to impose our will against the emerging order.
Thanks. A good question. Thanks.
Question, Chairperson, you see, that's why then I said this matter to me is a very complex matter because I cannot sit here and just criminalize the revolution of the people of this country because if leaders of this country are reactionary and don't want to listen to the people, people will actually then enter into a kind of a war zone against themselves. But it's unjust, I agree, it's unjust. But then what do we expect from the people? If and only if we can see anarchy in our land, with all the stealing of natural of resources of our land, taking place right under our nose, then we push security forces to say security forces must go and crush the weak people of our land. I personally cannot, as a public representative sitting in this parliament, go and actually then give endorsement to that particular thing. I don't understand. I'm begging to understand. I'm asking myself a question. My kids, some of my daughters are in the universities. The harshness of conditions they are confronted with is quite appalling.
Thanks. Thank you, Honourable Mr. Lungu. Thank you. Honourable September, a question from your side.
Thank you very much, Chair. To SAPS, why does the universities have to deploy their own security?
Again, just a question from my side in terms of let's say the limitations in the security context that was entered into by the universities during that period. I just want to get an understanding whether the university councils has dealt with that issue. Is there now general compliance at all campuses in South Africa, that's universities as well as the TVET colleges, do they now comply with the necessary proper contracts? Right, that's the question. Let's first go to SAPS, then go to CIRA. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe, Honorable Chairpersons, maybe to start with your last question, if you can just repeat that question, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks.
No, it's more a question maybe for CIRA. I mean, the allegation was made that, during the FISMOS 4 protest, a lot of the security contracts university entered into didn't comply in terms of minimum conditions, training, and so forth. I just want to get an indication. There's been a lot of interaction between SAPS and CIRA, but is there now compliance? Is the firms that was appointed, are they compliant? I mean, that's the real question.
All right, thanks, Honorable Chairpersons. Thanks, Honorable Members. I will take some of the questions and then leave some to my colleagues. always don't take the easy ones. Thanks. The first question was about what do you do with the question was about our response. What do you with our response to the violence, or with regard to those that are going to do it in the future? On that question, Honorable Chairpersons and members, we made use of video cameras with a view that we'll capture them when there is escalation of violence, so that later we can then investigate and follow up looking for those specific faces that were involved in the violence. Yes, while it's normal in universities, sometimes it's challenging because it's not easy to get to those faces. The universities, sometimes they don't want to get involved in that, they don't want to tell you where is the specific students, so it becomes a difficult task, but we do capture them with a view to identify them later. And then there was a question about what do we do with the safety and security inside campuses, and also the issue of access to the university. We know that the issue of campuses, they are private institutions. Hence, they employ the security companies to do their asset protection. So when the SAPS get involved or goes into the campus to deal with the unrest, the security is always still in the campus. What we did to make sure that there is seamless cooperation between the two institutions is that when the violence started, we appointed people, police, that we called liaison officers. And we said this police should not be involved with those that would be doing patrols or doing police in the premises. But their role is solely to be a link between the security of the university management, and SAPS, so that they only try to negotiate in between those role players with a view to have easy access. That takes me to the issue of access to universities. What we mean by that is some universities, as I said, we all know that you get into an institution through a student card. But some campuses or universities, unfortunately, is that there are students of other universities that you'll find them in those premises and they are unaccounted for. So it shows that there was poor access control to those institutions. And also the access to the premises by police was also a challenge in that, as I said, some universities will say, okay, come operate. And some universities will say, wait outside, we'll call you. So that is the university management, it is their campus. So, and when things goes wrong, that's when they call you to come in, and obviously you are quite late. So there were some universities that were having a problem with police to be on the campus itself. They wanted you to be far while everything is okay, which we do agree to an extent, but the problem is when there are problems that develop in the campus, which sometimes is not at one point, it's various places, then they would require that police should have been there. So those are the challenges we had when we say there was a problem with the access to the institutions. There was a question about the intelligence. Intelligence, we were deployed within the areas. Probably we didn't have it pre the unrest, and yes, there was a challenge with regard to intelligence in detecting as to what is going to happen and when. And at the same time, one would also acknowledge that a campus is quite big, so it might sometimes not be easy to predetermine what exactly is going to happen when, as the situation was quite changing all the time. So those were the challenges that we faced. There was a question around the issue of compliance with the law. get the question very well. I'll leave it to my colleagues. Compliance with the law. As far as the police is concerned, we did crowd management within the premises of the universities, of course, with the permissions of universities. And also some universities, as we said, they will apply for a court order for restraining the students. And once that court order has been violated, we'll need, of course, the statement from the institutions to say 1, 2, 3 have happened. And if you address, you arrest those people for the violation, and there's no backup of violation where the management of the university will say the security manager must do the statement, and the security manager will say the institution head must do it, and it becomes a challenge. You end up with the police having the people and the court order, but the owner of the premises not being there to support the action. On the question of how effective was the service that was given during that time, based on the damage that was there, one would say the police, as South African police services, together with the relevant security services that were there, taking into account the amount of violence that was there in the premises across the country, we think we did quite well. Of course, not to the satisfactory of everybody, and of course even to ourselves, because there was a lot of property that was damaged. But however, there was no loss of life as a result of the law enforcement agencies. And we did learn some lessons, which one of them is too, that we need to have continuous engagement with the role players, the security companies, the university campuses. We did have meetings with them to say they need to have uniform standards, even though that was did not go well, to say they can have that. They have different councils and they view things differently, they have different rules. So that is a challenge, but we said they should look at those rules to make them simple, simplify those rules so that cooperation can be better. I think I'll leave it there for my colleagues. Thanks.
Thank you, Co-Chairpersons, Honourable Members of Parliament. I think my Deputy National Commissioner has taken most of the questions, but I would just like to piggyback on the few. One, the issue asked by the co-chairperson to say that why securities by the universities, even though he have covered it. I think including the students and everybody does not want to see security forces patrolling the learning institutions, because should we invade that space, we are going to agitate almost everybody in that particular space and will forever be fighting with the students. So as things stand with those private securities there, handling access control, handling students' affairs, it is better for everybody. And also to create that space that there must be a relationship between the police and the students, not every day confronting each other. Another issue, if I may piggyback on the lesson learned asked by Honorable Nhlongo, is that yes, exercising maximum restraint, we have seen that is working for us. Two, we have also learned that it is better to communicate more. The departments who are directly involved, like the Department of Higher Learning and so forth, they must be on the forefront talking to all the affected groups. We as the security forces, we need to create that space that people, they must talk to each other, try to resolve issues amicably instead of securitizing everything. It works better for us if we allow people to can talk to each other. The issue of the liaison officers, it has also worked better for us, because these were the people who could listen to
different angles and bring it to their attention to say that this sector, they are not happy with the manner in which we are doing things as the police. The students, they are also not happy in the manner in which we are handling the situation. And based on that, it was regarded as a prompt debriefing session, because immediately we can adapt our response or adapt our methods in doing things. The complicity which associated this operation is that at times it was the students who were protesting. At the same time, you find workers of the very same institution sympathizing with the students or also advancing their own issues, students sympathizing with them. And between them and the university, you'll find that it's a private security, which we were working with. Tomorrow, when you go back to the very same institution, the very same security officers we were working with, they are also on strike. Now they are on that other side. You find yourself, you are alone this side. So it was a very difficult operation which we were embarked on. But we are happy that nobody died during that operation. So we have tried everything to the best of our abilities to restore public order. Thanks.
Thank you, General. Anybody else from SAPS? Thank you, General.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, colleagues. I just want to throw just a comment on the issue of intelligence, as my senior officials here have actually touched on it. I think the question there was posed on the issue of intelligence to say, how are we actually looking at that within the universities? I think what is important as well is that what we did actually focus on was to establish a VOC, the Venue Operational Center, within all universities that or institutions that are actually affected. As a result, the information was coordinated within that position so that we can be able to deal with the issues maybe before they become erupted. Even though, yes, it became more of like a lot of problems that were actually coming up. We talk on issues of outsourcing, we talk about the students themselves, then it became more challenging. But that's how the information was actually coordinated. Maybe just to add one point in closing is the issue, the question was why university has to deploy securities in a security official. I think the question was directed in that way. I think my point into that will be all university or institution are private institution, and the security officials are there just to make sure that they protect the property within those universities. However, when it comes to this position where we have a problem of this type of protest, SAPS must come in, that is public order policing must come in and deal with the situation. However, as we have already indicated, that the main problem is that the functioning of all the universities were not the same. In some subs can be inside, in some subs can be outside and be called in when the situation actually gets erupted. Sometimes it gets erupted, as they get there already the problem is actually there and it became a problem. That goes as far as the issue of application of the court orders and all that. That actually became a challenge to us as subs, and it's one of the lessons that we have to look at them to say how can we actually deal with those issues to make sure that this doesn't happen at all the time when we come to these type of issues. Because if SAPS or public order policing gonna be at the gate or at the entrance of the university and you call them in, then in that way they will be too late to deal with the situation. However, security officials are there to protect the property. It is a private institution and they have to deal with those issues. But when SAPS is called in, can actually come in and deal with the issues. But the moment the situation actually has erupted, we actually started having all those VOC, then operational centers, to control those issues to make sure that we deal with the problems before actually anything erupts. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question raised around compliance with both the Regulation of Gatherings Act and the CERA Act to to overcome this and ensure that we don't have a creeping over of our mandates, each institution was under unified command, and that command was led by SAPS, where roles and responsibilities was clearly spelled out in terms of the mandate. Now that was a lesson learned to ensure that we don't have a silo approach to this. So the uniform command was put in place to ensure that both CIRA and private security, as well as SAPS, we operate in terms of our mandate. Then, Chair, the last comment is around docket analysis and some of the findings and trends and patterns. And the lessons learned around that is that most of the cases were based around public violence, assault, intimidation, and the best way to address this was a strong evidence-based investigative approach. It didn't require long-term investigation afterwards. So the approach we adopted is that we will have a very strong evidence approach with regards to video footage identification, because most of these cases involve individuals being put together as a collective. So evidential approach was very important to us. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Shira. Shira?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll deal with some of the questions and also ask my colleagues to deal with some. The question around the use of body cameras. Chairperson, we would strongly encourage those that can afford in terms of the security companies to utilize all measures possible to ensure that when it comes to accountability, they can better account for their actions. Currently, we do not want to issue a directive and say all of them must use a body camera. So we believe that there's adequate other mechanisms as well that would ensure that accountability is there. Otherwise, we may encourage a situation where there's a barrier of entry into certain sectors of the industry. But we do encourage technology to be used to ensure that there is accountability. Chairperson, the other question that was asked was around the cases, I think, who will be held liable in a case where the security industry, security service providers found to have utilized those that are unregistered. I think also closer to that question is the question of who should be ensuring compliance. Chairperson, both the university as well as the security company will be held liable. First, the university must ensure that the services that are used or procured by them are those that comply with law. There's an obligation like that. In fact, in terms of our act, it's a criminal offense for any client to procure services from a service provider that is not in compliance with the law. Secondly, it is also unlawful for a security company to use security services that are not compliant with the law. So both of them would be liable in that case. Security company would be liable in the form of criminal sanction. They will also be liable in terms of a code of conduct. So we can deal with both institutions in that case. So I think the question as to how many of the cases that were reported, I will ask my colleague just to deal with it in detail, and also how do we then ensure that the compliance with regard to the Department of Higher Education Universities, specifically the question by the chairperson, whether are the universities compliant right now. Perhaps our deputy chairperson can deal with some of the interactions we've dealt with such stakeholders. Thank you.
The chairperson of CIRA, thank you.
No, thank you, chairperson. We have engaged with the University of South Africa, former ISA, with the CEO, Professor Bao, on this issue. We have also engaged with the Council of the TVET, the General Council, the Chairperson's Body of the TVET Governing Council, led by Sima Buyaku and Dr. Zuma and Dr. Zuma. And it became clear in our engagement that they were not aware
add on to what the director has said in terms of the possible, you know, cameras. And I think what the honourable member is absolutely correct. I think the lines between private security and the South African police are continuously becoming a little bit blurred. You know, where the private security industry main aim is crime avoidance, where the South African police service more towards apprehension and investigation. But we see that the private security industry obviously playing to a large extent a more investigative role as well when it comes to, you know, apprehension and investigation. So it is a challenging aspect, you know, in terms of the private security industry's understanding where to draw the line in terms of their functions. When it comes to this particular issue of protest action and crowd management, you know, the intention of the director was to make it very clear, you know, to spell it out in terms of what is the obligations of the private security industry and where does their role end and where does the role of this African police service take over. As far as the cases are concerned, we do have a record of the cases. We've actually had an incident of, a shooting incident at the university, Technical University of Technology in Pretoria, where a security officer was arrested, but I must add that case was struck from the roll for further investigation. So we do have record of some of the cases that were highlighted where the private security industry was involved. But I must also add, not all matters were reported to CIRA. Some students reported matters directly to the South African Police Service, and we will not be able to give that kind of information, unfortunately, at this stage. As far as our investigations are concerned, we are our own investigations in terms of conduct of security industry. As mentioned in my presentation, we've opened 24 cases, and these cases are at different stages as well. We will gladly give the committees a report on the matters at hand. We've had incidences where the universities contracted unregistered security businesses. In those particular situations, we immediately gave instructions for the contracts to be cancelled immediately, and that was done. But from our side, then obviously we then follow up with our own investigation for the misconduct that actually transpired. In terms of the levels of compliance now, Jefferson, you know, it's actually quite very high. It forms part of our monthly inspection programs to visit the universities and the campuses, and to ensure that the compliance level remain high. We've got two parts in the security industry. We've got the contract security businesses that's contracted by the universities, but we have a lot of universities following on from the fees must fall and the demands for insourcing. We do have a lot of universities that insource the security services now, and we work with them to get them compliant, because obviously there was great will on their side as well to ensure that they do not fall short of the law. So those are the inspection programs that we follow now on a monthly basis, and the level of compliance is very high. I can report just last week we received allegations at the University of Witwatersrand. We immediately sent out teams, and we actually can report that the levels of compliance is very high. The allegations, you know, did not carry any.
Right, Sira, is that all your responses? Right, members, let's go to the second round. Honourable Mbele.
Thanks, Chair. Just very quickly and very simply, from my place here. The presentation from the SAPS, my question is for SAPS this round. There was mention of the aspects of the use of liaison officers to coordinate stakeholder engagements and be the go-between. And the general mentioned, it was the Brigadier presenting, my apologies, said that those liaison officers were not involved in operational planning. Can I ask what the reason for that was? Because at least, you know, one school of thought might say that you would like the liaison officer to be at least somewhat involved, because as the interface, they can bring insights from both realms to, informed discussions on either side. So if they're not involved in the operational planning, but they're closer to, say, a university management, they could have valuable information to feed into the operational planning. Just the logic around that and how you mitigate
Thank you, Honorable.
And also, what rank were they generally? Are we talking constables? Are we talking colonels? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honorable Batsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Tell us, Tusira, tell us about the outcomes of the Campus Protection Society of South Africa conference that was held in 2016 that you were part of. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable for the Vistas.
Thank you, Chair. I'm afraid I didn't hear what I was hoping to hear regarding the combating of the criminal activities that unfortunately also became part of these actions. Can you tell us today that you've purchased more video cameras? Can you tell me that you have cleared with the NPA the use of video footage? Can you tell us that you have implemented face recognition software? Chair, I would really like to hear from the police here, what are they going to do differently in future mass action? And not only on, at our universities, I think this is something the lessons learned can hopefully be applied in all other similar instances as well. Please tell us what are you going to do differently next time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have you, sorry. It's a lot of new members.
Sorry, Chairperson. I'm partly captured by the former honourable member, and I tell you why. Because we're about to get the report from the Fees Commission, and as a former student leader and the person whose constituency I deal with directly in terms of that, and if we're being serious and honest with ourselves, when you consider the call from students and the submissions made, the report will not deal directly with their call and plea. And the Department of Higher Education is here, and they know that because of funding issues, etc., which obviously deals directly with our responsibility as lawmakers, and we can't impose that on the police or private security. But I'm also not hearing a concurrent strategic plan that says, and that's why I asked the question that you've done an analysis, you've looked at the cases, you've seen reports. Having considered that, what can we see can be done differently? If previously we had more than 100 cases of students who've perhaps been found in a residence who have petrol bombs, etc., what then do we do to combat that? If we found students have been arrested irregularly or their cases have been dismissed because of inadequate evidence, what are we going to do to address that? If we've seen that many of our officers, and I know this directly because in 2015 I was there, when there's no proper communication, many of our police are not adequately trained to deal with such situations. So what then do we do to ensure that in the event that we find ourselves with a protest in the second semester, we're able to address it adequately to ensure that no student is harmed, because the call is genuine, the issues are genuine, and it poses us and a challenge to us, which is fine. But in terms of those who are supposed to ensure that there's safety and stability in the country, what can you do directly and differently in our institutions of higher learning, be it universities, be it TVET colleges, and generically in our communities? Because the issue is not going to proceed to our communities, because we've got more than 6 million young people that are not in employment or education, and their call to is to access a dose of education. So for now, we've dealt with the micro segment of society, but I foresee that it's going to expand differently, and we don't want any casualties. We all want the same thing, to ensure that our young people are educated, they find employment, and there's safety and stability in the country.
Thank you, Honourable Miller.
Thank you, Chairperson. To Sir, in slide 10, you have highlighted several obligations of the private security industry in the protest environment. Please indicate what the levels of compliance is to the mentioned obligations, and what are the consequences to non-compliance service providers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kikana.
Yes, Chair, the first thing is that I think the issue that was raised about that people died, why are we celebrating it? I think there it was clear that we're fighting a system that was unacceptable, not just to South Africa, but internationally. United Nations declared it a crime. survive against humanity. So when it was defeated, it was something to be celebrated because there's democracy, there is peace now, and as internationally acceptable standard that South Africa is living under. In this instance, I would say the police still have a duty. I mean, the issue of things getting out of hand happened all over the world. And when it happened, in the first world, they actually, like somebody said, have a specially trained squad. That would be in Britain, I understand. They'll send out the police to handle it, but those police are unarmed because we don't want them to harm students. They go there and they are armed, but not with weapons. But I'm just saying there is a special force that is specially trained to deal with rioters and upheaval like this. And that is in a democratic state, where if there's a democratic problem, that is for politicians to deal with. But police are still obliged to do their law enforcement work. So are you, indeed, I want to emphasize that point, going to train that special squad that will deal with this? There are problems we accept, but those are for politicians to sort out. And they are not just happening in South Africa. They happen in all countries all over the world when there's a strike or a student upheaval. They do happen. But the nation has a way to deal with some such, which is what I think we are lacking in South Africa. We are not ready for it, and we need to be ready. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable then Honorable Honorable Kilan, then Honorable Khan.
Thank you, Chair. You know, sometimes listening to some of the comments, I'm tempted to say that, to suggest that the government of the day is not alive to the struggle of the students is disingenuous. We know for sure that the president, for example, has put up a commission to look into the issues of student funding, and we are waiting the report from that commission. That to me says the government is aware and is trying to find a solution to the problem. So I just wanted to make that point. It's important to put out a message out there that is very positive about the government. I know that we may have got some different views, but I'm just making that point. As we speak, the commission is doing its work, and we hope that we'll receive the report very soon, and to me, that is positive. And secondly, I know well ahead that anybody, be the university or the security company that operates or unregistered, will be held liable, criminally liable. But I did not hear who then lays the charges in this case, because CIRO themselves identify that as a problem. And as a registration authority, and that practice is, what are you doing now to correct that situation as it has happened? Because we do not want a situation where if anything goes wrong in future, and CIRA as the registration authority will wash off its head and say, no, we don't know those people, and we don't know where they are coming from. It is good that for now there is no casualties, and that the situation has been handled very well, and we are happy about that. But should that happen, are you going to wash off your hands in future? Or you better start preventing that practice from occurring, because you have been established for a reason. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the response that you gave to me in terms of the access, but I wanted to hear you telling us the relevant universities that were not allowing you to execute your duties in time. The question that I'll be having again is, in terms of all the challenges that you are having lack of access, inadequate cooperation with SAPS, withdrawal of cases, and lack of support by the institutions to the criminal investigations. What are the plans in place going forward? What are you going to do to make sure that there is good collaboration and a sound communication? Because you can't execute your duties while you are not in good collaboration, your communication is not sound. Going forward, what are you intending to do? What plans do you have in place to solve those problems?
Thank you very much, Honourable Kadiming. Just a moment, before we go to Honourable Kilan, I saw Honourable Abidja came in. Is there anything from your side? You want to, any questions from your side? Honourable Togo, while you're there, please continue and then we will go to Professor Mosibang and Honourable Kilan will be last. Thank you.
Sure. No, thanks. I'll be very short. I was just forced to respond here. You know, Jefferson, maybe as a free lecturer, if you go to Algeria, there was no commission. The Algerian revolution was on course led by determined people, a determined leadership, very young tenor, who came up with three cardinal pillars and just said, uncompromisingly, we are going to change the socio-economic patterns that were imposed by French forces here. Unlike us here in South Africa, when we go and gun and mow down our people in Marikana for demanding change to property relations. And then, that's why then I raised this question. I think we need to listen to ourselves as a nation. We cannot, as this nation, keep a blind eye that you have got just a family of three guys, of Guptas, looting these resources of this country under our nose, and then we must pretend as if there is nothing wrong here. We cannot. How many billions of rands looted in our plaza? When workers who are productive forces of this country cannot even travel in a very comfortable way to working areas. Now, that's why then I'm saying, at times, even only if as leaders, we don't listen to ourselves correctly and our people, we will see wabono lokwa usawu. I'm telling you honestly, it happened in Algeria when you had such a corrupt leadership in office that a young guy had to come up and challenge the system openly from the very same liberation forces that fought against French forces. Here in South Africa, we are no longer a country here. We are just bluffing ourselves because we don't want to be honest. We don't want to talk to powers that be that you guys are misleading our country. I cannot kill South Africa, my country that I fought for. A country that is looted by just three guys. Raping us, standing as men. Rubbish.
Sorry. Thank you. Honourable Professor Mosibang, anything from your side? Are you covered? Honourable Kilian, you will be the last. Thank you.
Yes, Chairperson, I just want to make just a comment or two before I come to the question. Chairperson, I don't think anybody in this room disputes the right of students to protest in terms of the provision of the Constitution, which is unarmed and which is not going to traverse into criminal activity. So let us just understand that. Secondly, it is we are facing a problem in terms of opening the doors further, but we also must ensure that those who go through our institutions actually go through successfully. So putting more money into going to university is not going to solve it in the end. It is an education system that must train the young people
to actually have success at universities. So clearly, that is what we're trying to engage on, how to give more young South Africans access to education and training. Now, that brings me now to the point. I think there is a responsibility by private security as well as SAPS to ensure that those students and the property, the infrastructure, etc. is protected. I understand that SAPS says there's difficulty. It's private universities. They cannot go onto the university campuses unless they are called and there was lack of coordination. But what is of a concern is they've made a comment about some students who have been seen going from one university campus to the other. I would like to know if there's clear evidence of that, because obviously that would be a very interesting. We have heard from the Department of Higher Education as well that that was the case, but obviously if SAPS are confirming that, then it is a matter that, that should be carefully monitored. And then again, coming back to the private security industry, the Act is very clear that any institution that is to perform any such security function to protect buildings and persons must be registered. Now it brings me back, and maybe the department will have to answer in this regard. Practically, how will universities, if they are going to insource, are they going to establish their own personal security to be registered as a private security institution? Practically, how will they be doing it? Because if the Act says any person establishing any such institution, it must be registered. And I would like to know if the EPSIRA is aware that some of the institutions did not comply. You did say that there was a high rate of compliance. But have they now, those who have not complied, have they now regularized their engagement of private security firms? Chairperson, because this is ultimately, it's going to be a team effort between the institutions through the, obviously also the Department of Higher Education must take note of what is happening, but it's going to be important for SAPS and CIRA to coordinate their planning. Will SAPS attend the Congress or the conference that will be held in September, just as sort of bystanders or, you know, observers? Because ultimately, all of this need to come together so that we ensure the safety and security of people and buildings, etc., but allow the students to exercise their democratic right in a responsible manner. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Members. Co-Chair? Yeah, maybe the last question from my side. Maybe just the assurance from SAPS that all criminal activities that will take place at campuses are being investigated. We had recently some rape cases at some universities. There was the indication that some of the administrations were not quite cooperative. Can we just get that undertaken from SAPS? If there is criminal activity, be it statutory or criminal procedure, they will be investigated. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Having listened to the both the questions and the responses and the earlier presentations that were given here, I think it would be correct to say that there's much more that needs to be done in this area, and that we cannot conclude on this part of the meeting on the basis that we have satisfied ourselves that we're walking away here with a situation that there's a lot that are in place with regards to whether it is crowd control or whether it is whenever there are any difficulties in this instance, especially at the institutions of higher learning. And so I think, co-chair, that having said that, maybe it would be correct to say that there needs to be a number of maybe some of the issues that the members have raised must be taken into as some recommendations that you have to think about how as we move forward. Because I think the one thing that stands out, and the reason why we've also asked you to come here, is because we've engaged with all the different role players, and they were very, very heartrending stories that they gave us, and some of them in the midst of when the crises happened at these institutions. And so I think today, having met certainly ourselves as the first time with the committee and with yourself from outside on higher education and training, it is certainly evident to us that there's quite a lot that needs to be done. We will ask the CETA later what training are being given. We think that there are lots of challenges around just basically how to do crowd control. We hear what the police are saying. Look, sometimes they want to allow you in and others not, and all of that. But surely there's a way around that. And surely there are international experiences that show how these things are being done and why would it be so difficult. The part that I'm very worried about is we think it would be wrong not to engage the students in the plans that you are talking about also. Because the important stakeholders at the colleges and at the universities are the management, are the students, sometimes their parents and guardians also, who would like to know what are we doing about their safety. And so I think there's probably a broader approach that needs to be applied on what would be the best methodologies that needs to be deployed in this instance. We accept that the police has got a role to play, but we hear that your lines get blurred with them, and that's a problem. Because where there is confusion, anarchy will quickly come in, and there will be somebody that will exploit the situation, like it has happened. The situation was exploited many a time. There are very horrid stories that we heard about the private securities, very horrid stories, and there were very many women that whose lives were very much in danger. So I want to suggest, Chair, that we should maybe not take this conversation off the radar. We should maybe just hear and get reports again what progress are being made, what are being put in place. How do we make sure that we do not have the situations that we've had? What absolute training measures are going into, especially around crowd control? I won't forget the stories at Wits University. I won't forget that woman lying there on the floor. Doesn't matter what you are explaining today about, you know, who was where and so on. And so I think it will be important maybe just to hear again how things are being done and what measures are being put in place that will improve far more than what we've heard here today. We take into consideration what you say, that the role that political parties have played, and I think Parliament must reflect on what you have said, because we cannot ask everyone else out there to play a particular role and make sure that things are fine and we do not do the same, that we don't lead in the manner that society expects us to lead. It's not our job to fan things out there. It's our job to make sure that that which needs to happen legislatively and constitutionally are to be there. We're not supposed to be in the forefront of asking students 3 o'clock in the morning to overturn decisions and do very strange kind of thing. So we equally must take responsibility as politicians also. It's the right thing to do.
Thank you for that contribution. Let's go to the responses. If we can keep it concise, we're moving towards 4 o'clock, so we want to make sure that we
thanks, Chairperson. Maybe let me start with the honorable chairpersons and honorable members. Let me start with the remark that you made. Indeed, with regard to cases that has been opened, the criminal activities where cases have been opened, yes, we can confirm that we are investigating such cases. Some are in court, some are for decisions. There's few, one or two that has been finalized. I know in Free State where a student threw a petrol bomb to a building and the fire was put down. He was charged. He was found guilty, but the magistrate cautioned him that he mustn't do it again and he went home. So he was found guilty. Police have done their job there. And yeah, some of the cases are still in the middle of criminal justice system. And going back to the question by Honorable Mbele of the liaison officers, the issue of liaison officers is one of the things that we started when this recent violence erupted. Why it was mentioned that they don't form part of the operations, it's not necessarily that they don't form part of the operational plan. What we're saying is that they don't form part of the physical operations on the ground. The reason being that these liaison officers that we started was that we wanted somebody, police official, at the rank of lieutenant colonel and above, mostly lieutenant colonel and colonel, to establish a relationship with the institution as well as the students, the security company, and then find out what actually are the problems and find ways of resolving things without the use of force. For example, where they were going to march from point A to point B, the student might say, no, we are not going to be violent, and the police might say, you're not going to march. So this liaison officer will then, in the back room, talk with the students and the university. If he reaches a compromise, he will advise the operational police that, no, let's do it. I think here we can make it. So it's somebody that don't get physically with the operations on the ground, and we prefer that he don't even wear uniform, but he's known that he's a police by the student as well as the university. But his role is mainly to sort of break peace and find commonalities and try and address, make sure that things go smooth. And in most universities, it worked quite well for us where they were able to reach certain resolutions without the police having to use violence. And we said these liaison officers, they shouldn't stop after that. They must continue keeping that relationship within the community of the university as well as the students. So that's one of the things that we embarked upon, which we found it to be working for us. With regard to, there was a question about video cameras and what are we going to do differently and what strategy do we have moving forward. Some members, honorable members of this, the Police Portfolio Committee, will be aware that we did ask for extra funding with regard to capacitating public order police in terms of equipment. I think the current financial year we were given 214 million where we will be buying extra equipment, and we also recruiting more police members for public order. The current year as we talk, we are having 580 students as we speak that are under training. Unfortunately, they'll only come out at the end of this year to be operational on the ground. So we are also recruiting other members to get there, but bear in mind that we recruit from other police stations to public order. It means you're just robbing Peter to pay Paul. So those are the initiatives that we are doing. And the current POP members are subjected to continuous training so that their training can improve. Because public order to crowd management is a game of numbers. If you don't have numbers, you definitely won't manage. You're going to have problems with the members. So there is a capacitation in terms of this funding that we have received where we are buying more cameras. It's quite for that, for this new camera should be able to capture better, and we can use that evidence better in court. But also, we have to take note that some of the challenges which we hampers criminal cases to go forward is that cases are registered, investigated, and at some point some don't want to move forward with the cases. And in instances, you know, those that were in campuses, is that some of the students just don't want to go on, or they don't open a case at all. It happened a lot in universities when they were writing exam, where somebody would come in and you know, throw something that will cause a bang in the class, and everybody is disturbed from writing exam. Police come and they say, okay, let's open a case. None of the students is prepared. They say, well, it happened, happened, but none of them is prepared to say, my rights have been infringed for writing exam. I'm prepared to open a case. So those were the challenges that you sometimes get as we move forward. But we are buying equipment with a view to make sure that in the future we have the right equipment. But we do not say using police and students, using police and equipment would be the solution. One of the solutions is to solve this problem before they escalate through negotiation, where our liaison officers will be involved with the relevant parties. There was also a question around about the issue of institutions that were not supporting the police. We can give those names. We don't want to give it here, but maybe we can give it after. The name of those universities where there was a problem in cooperation with the police. The going around of students from one university to another, yes, it did happen. We are aware that, yes, it was happening across the country. The way students from universities that you'll find in other provinces, in other universities, it did happen. And I think Philip's on some of the